Blog Talk Radio.
Hello there, football fans. This is Deb Yens coming to you from Southern California for Women's Football Talk Continues Friday Night Football Preview. I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for tuning in. You may be asking yourself, who the heck is Deb Yens? Not very many people ask that, but probably two or three people out there are wondering. I'm a former player for the California Quake, as well as the Long Beach Aftershock, and I also helped manage the Long Beach Aftershock for a little bit, so I have a vested interest in women's football. And today on the show, shortly, we will be having women's football expert extraordinaire Boo Hunter on. But first, I would like to go through some of the scores from last week. We had a total of about 15 games in the IWFL, and the Shreveport Aftershock was defeated by the Houston Energy, a score of 49-0. The Seattle Majestics played the Portland Shockwave. That was a lot closer game than what most of us anticipated, but the Majestic won that 14-12. It did change the ratings quite a bit. The Southern California Breakers and the Amazons faced off. Amazons won that 33-0. The Wisconsin Warriors beat the Iowa Crush by a score of 42-0. Erie Illusion and the Montreal Blitz played. The Blitz won that 41-10. The Chattanooga Locomotion faced the Carolina Queens. The Queens won that 30-12. The Reading Rage played the Corvallis Pride, and that was a score of 2-0 in favor of the Pride. The Modesto Maniacs, the California Quake played. The Quake won that 58-24. Tucson Monsoon played the New Mexico Menace. The Tucson team won that 55-7. The Baltimore Nighthawks played the DC Divas. The Divas won that easily, 70-14. The Detroit Demolition played the Pittsburgh Passion, and the Passion won that 34-12. The Carolina Phoenix played the Palm Beach Punishers, and that score was 14-9, and the Phoenix won that. The Southern Maine Rebels played the Central PA Vipers. That score was 14-8 in favor of the Rebels. The Cape Fear Thunder and the Louisville Nightmare played, and Cape Fear Thunder won that 34-14. The Tennessee Valley Tigers beat the Clarksville Fox by a score of 23-0, and the Vixen and the Chicago Force played. Minnesota lost that to Chicago a score of 0-53. The Atlanta Explosion played the Miami Fury. I got this one wrong. I called the Fury, and it was the Explosion. They won by score of 16-12. The other game I called wrong was the Tennessee Valley Tigers. I thought the Fox would take that, but the Tigers won decisively 23-0. So that's what happened in week 7. We're getting pretty well set up for the playoffs here, and that is why I would like to have football expert Boo Hunter on. Boo, are you available yet?
Hello, do you hear me on the line?
I hear you. Welcome to the show, Boo.
How are you doing today?
I'm just fine. Would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about your football history.
Well, some people have been around football long enough to know me. Once upon a time, we could never find any information on the web. And as you know, Deb, I'm kind of a geek, and I write computer software for a living. So to me, making a website it sounds like fun. And so I got started paying attention to women's football because I made a website tracking what was at the time my league, which was the WAFL, and then it quickly expanded to include all the leagues that I could find on the Internet. And that was the beginning of the unofficial guide to women's pro football. And it's still going all these years later. I'm not keeping it up to date on a week-by-week basis anymore, but I will update it at the end of the seasons. And it sort of serves as a repository in history of all the teams and all the leagues and official results and everything I can find on the Internet. So, in addition to being a sort of an uber geek football fan, I also played for 3 years, as you know, back in the inaugural season of the Quake. And, that's my history. And, you know,
all
I've
right.
been around long enough where some people know me.
All right. What year would you say contemporary women's football started? Was it 2001? Was it 2000?
No. The barnstorming season way back when was in 1999, and that was the WPFL had the Vixen and the, I'm blanking on it, the Minx. It wasn't West Michigan Minx. I'm totally blanking on it. But anyway, and those two teams put on the barnstorming season, which is really the origination of the modern era of women's pro football. And it was the following year that, you know, instead of just having two teams playing each other, we ended up with some actual leagues with some actual teams. The WPFL played, I think, had 10 or 11 in the league in the year 2000. The NWFA got started with their barnstorming season in the year 2000, and 2001 is when it really took off, and that's when we got teams across the country and started having some, you know, meaningful league play and some playoff systems that, you know, was really coming up with good games and good teams. So, yeah,
okay.
It's been 10 years, huh? 11 years for the barnstorming teams.
Yeah, longer than what was in my head. Well, I was looking at the map today, Boo, and I noticed that there are like little, I took coins and I drew circles around where the areas are, where there are these centers of football, and I came up with about five areas where there are little pockets of huge football groups. You know, of course, California and the Southwest area, and then there's one in the, like, I suppose the center of it would kind of be sort of Chicago or maybe Cleveland area, but that little pocket. There's one sort of in the Midwest where it includes Texas and some of the Missouri teams. And then there's a Florida circle, and then there's like the, the D.C. area, if you want to say that.
There's kind of an Atlantic seaboard area that has a whole lot of teams in a fairly small distance. But then don't forget you have a couple of little outliers from those, too. And, you know, those are the teams that, you know, have, you know, trouble with travel costs, but like New Mexico is sort of out in the middle of nowhere. They aren't close to anybody, but they keep playing. That was the problem with the Denver team. Always had a trouble because they were sort of in the middle of nowhere geographically. But back in the original WPFL season, the Colorado Valkyries were a very, very good team, very powerful.
Oh, I didn't even know there was a team in Colorado. I would think that the team up in Maine, the Rebels, and then there's a team in Montreal, the Blitz. Those two are kind of outliers too. So we've got about maybe five, probably encompassing maybe six teams. But you gave me a suggestion today about kind of a focus. Do you remember how you phrased that, or you want me to paraphrase it?
Well, you may remember better than I what I said. But my line of thinking was. I got to thinking about, as you said in your intro, we're getting to the point where we sort of know, you know, who's looking good, who's going to make the playoffs, who has a shot, and who doesn't. And I started thinking that most of the teams that are in contention at this point in the season are teams that have been around a while, which totally makes sense. Teams that have been playing for more than a couple of years, especially if you have a core group of players that are staying together. Football is a game that takes a lot of practice, and it's hard for a new organization to really come up and do it well, especially against teams that have, you know, those years of experience. And I think the team that embodies this most would be Dallas, the Dallas Diamonds. I am quite frankly in the who's going to beat the Diamonds camp, and I've been saying that all year. I think they're the best team out there, and, you know, I'm always rooting for the underdog and for somebody to come beat Dallas, but I don't see anybody beating them. So Dallas is a really good team, a good organization, and I don't know how they do it, how they are so head and shoulders above everybody else, but it's the preseason work that they put in, the practice and the conditioning and all the time that they spend 12 months a year on football, and that's staying power in an organization, a team that's been around long enough to get really, really good at what they're doing. Anyway, that was my line of thought for today, and I don't know. What did you think of it?
Well, you know, I remember back in the day when Houston, the Houston Energy, which are they're not even in contention this year, but they are in that little pocket down in the Texas area. I remember when Houston was the team to beat, and they had won three WPFL championships in a row. And
they
Dallas,
won the first three, yeah.
Yeah, Dallas was eager to play them, so much so that they printed up T-shirts that said something about the ring is ours this year. I mean, they were just out to go get him. And I think what they've done is they've essentially transferred that target to themselves. But I agree with you. The thing is, we need to find somebody that can beat Dallas. Now, that's the IWFL. Let me go through, Boo, because I have the playoff teams that are in contention right now, and you can give me a little bit of what you know as far as their history. So let's start with the Western Conference. We're all really, you and I especially, are pretty familiar with most of those teams. The four teams that are pretty much the leaders right now, we've got the Chicago Force, followed by the Los Angeles Amazons, the Seattle Majestics, and then the Kansas City Tribe. So why don't you, you know, pick whichever one. I list them in the order, but it doesn't really matter. What do you see as the history of these teams as it relates to what you know from a few years back? Are these teams that have been standing strong for a while?
Yeah, all of these teams have a veteran coaching, I think. At least, you know, what passes for veteran in women's football is somebody who's been around for more than 3 years. And Chicago, as we know, went to the championship game last year and took Dallas to overtime. So I really wish I had seen that game. That would have been a fun game to watch. All of these teams are really, really, you know, they're good. They're very, very powerful. The Los Angeles Amazons, I think they started play in 2002. I think they're the oldest of the teams that you mentioned, with, you know, maybe the Seattle started around that time as well. They were originally the Tacoma Majestics, and I think they had some connection with the 2001 team, which was the Seattle Warbirds, which played in the WAFL. And but yeah, Chicago, I think out of those four, they're my favorite out of the West, and I they're my pick to repeat, to go to the championship game, with the Amazons as an outside contender. Amazons, as we know, they're a good team. They have good speed, and when they play well, they can beat the world. But I have yet to see them play a perfect game this year, and they, you know, the Amazons have, you know, they have a lot of good players, and they have a little bit of history of shooting themselves in the foot. They'll make it to the playoffs. I'm not sure if they'll make it to the championship. And I want them to go and prove me wrong, like I say. I love to see teams, you know, play up to their capabilities.
But, well, having an inside foot into the Amazons, I can tell you that they have a coach this year. Last year was the first year he was with the organization, and boy, he's made a huge, huge difference. It's taken him a while to get everybody on the same page, but
Like their play calling this year. The Amazons are doing a really good job in having a very well balanced attack.
Right, they do, but I tell you, the actually consistent play calling has been important. But they have had some ups and downs with their personnel and still been able to persevere. They've had some injuries. They've had some. One of their players had, I think it was an appendix issue or something, vacations and stuff, which you always have, you know, to deal with in football. But this one coach, and I wish I could give you his name. I can't right off the top of my head. Maybe I can look it up. But they really have turned it around since he's been with the organization. I'm hoping they're going to be able to be strong. Well, we'll see. As it looks right now, If nothing changes, and there are some things that can happen, but the Force would probably play Kansas City, and then the Amazons would play the Majestics.
Right. I think the Force and the Tribe are playing this weekend.
Yeah, they are. It's a rematch.
Yeah, and I can see why you're kind of high on the Tribe there. That, you know, I know you followed the football in that part of the country as well. And yeah, they're doing pretty well out there. I think Kansas City is very much a dark horse team, but they're coming up, and you know, they're making some noise out there in the Midwest.
Yeah, I'm trying to get several of the girls from that organization on the show next week. The Force have an outstanding quarterback in, I think it's Sammy Grisafi, and she was injured in, I think it was maybe the third game. I have a chat room here that I'm kind of watching, by the way, Boo, and let me just interject. The other team that you were trying to figure out down that barnstorming was the Michigan Lynx.
Michigan Lynx. I knew it was something with an M. Thank you very much, whoever contributed that.
Yeah, that's BJ for you. She knows all this stuff, too, but anyway, Sammy Grisafi was injured, so she hasn't been playing for a few games. But I'm telling you, some of the teams that that the Kansas City and the Force have both played. They've been really close. So I am thinking that this weekend, that game between the Force and the KC Tribe will be a very, very dynamic game. But I'm hoping next week it'll be a really neat interview. Of course, you know, I like Chicago, but, of course, being from the Midwest, homies and all, I'm kind of hoping
to root for your home team, right?
Chicago. And wouldn't that be great to be able to talk to them right after they knock the socks off of Chicago? But we'll see. I'm not really against Chicago at all. I like Chicago, and I just like football in general. But now let's move down or over, I guess, to the Eastern Conference, and let me give you the teams that are in contenders currently right now. We've got the D.C. Divas, and they're followed by the Diamonds, and you and I know about the Diamonds. The Passion and the Militia. Actually, Boston Militia, they're ahead of the Pittsburgh Passion. What are how long have those teams been around? Can you give me information about those four?
Well, DC Divas originally started as one of the 10 original teams of the NWFL's first season before they became the NWSA. The Boston Militia is an interesting group in that there were a couple of teams sort of in the greater Boston region who finally merged together. This would be equivalent of if the Quake and the Amazons and the Breakers all decided, well, let's not be separate teams anymore. Let's take all of our good players and make one kick-ass team. That's sort of
right.
The Militia right now. And,
so that'd be like the New England Storm from the WPFL?
I'm not sure if any of the Storm players are still around or if there's one or two. I wouldn't be surprised. Also, there was the Mass Mutiny, the Massachusetts Mutiny, and
okay,
then
yeah.
The Boston Rampage. And so the Militia wears the colors that the Rampage were wearing, the black and red. But I'm pretty sure they have players from all of those organizations and maybe a few of the other outliers there, you know, and their experience is showing. Same thing with the Divas. And as we know, Dallas, we've already talked about them in this show. The Pittsburgh Passion is a team that they were not part of the first wave that was coming through in 2000 and 2001. They were a couple of years later, but they've been playing like since the middle of the decade, so they have like a good 4 or 5 years of winning football. And the thing about the Mid-Atlantic division, where the Divas and the Passion are in the division together, and as well as the Detroit Demolition, and Detroit is, I think, in the number three spot in the division right now, which is someplace you'd never think you'd see the Demolition, because all of the teams, they keep playing each other, and they're all good teams. And, you know, so even though Detroit is 3-3, I think, right now, they could still, you know, easily handle half the other teams in the league. It's just their bad luck that they're playing teams that are competitive with them, and that's just the luck of the draw. You play who's on your schedule. But, yeah, all
right.
That competition makes them all really good teams. So,
well,
yeah.
Now, see, that's another factor that comes into play. You know who Detroit plays after this week? They play Chicago.
Again, that's going to be a headbanger match, isn't it?
Yes.
Let's fly back there and watch it, okay?
Wouldn't that be fun? You know, though, Boo, the championship game is in July, and I don't know
it's in Texas this year, right?
Yeah, it's in Austin. We should get on our motorcycles and ride down there. But
do you know
anyway,
how hot it is in Austin in July?
Who cares, Boo? I work in the Inland Empire. For those of you who don't know that, that's the armpit of California, and it's very hot.
Let's go.
Well, some parts are nice. I shouldn't say it like that. But the Force played the Detroit Demolition, and I'm trying to find in my stats because Detroit upset somebody, and I think it was Pittsburgh, and that's why Pittsburgh is having such a hard time. I think it could have been because the DC Divas beat Pittsburgh. I'm trying to figure out who their two wins are. They don't play this week, so I've got to go into the standings, I think, and figure out if I can see who they are.
Are you seeing who Detroit was playing? They've won against Wisconsin and
they've
Baltimore.
Already
oh, and they beat Chicago on May 16.
Yeah, that was the upset. So the fact that they beat Chicago once already.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think that was one of the first times maybe.
And that's Chicago's one loss. Chicago's 5-1 right now, right?
Yeah, Chicago's 5-1, and I think the fact that I'm getting some information here from, BJ's telling us, and I was on the wrong page, I was looking it up. I think that the Force are a little bit vulnerable without Grisafi in there, so So I'm wondering if they're going to be able to hold on.
That's part of football, though, is dealing with the injuries, right?
Oh, sure it is. Yeah, they've had to do some shuffling. I mean, they've been successful. One of their wide receivers, they moved into the quarterback spot, and she had a great game. So they're definitely well coached because they're, you know, whenever you can take a wide receiver and shift her in, and then still do a really bang up job on the yards in the passing column, you've got some good coaching. Well, and some dynamic athletes. But as far as Pittsburgh, do you know too much about their organization?
Well, there was some question on whether or not the Pittsburgh team would lose out to the Pittsburgh Force was originally formed to join the NWFA, and then that became they became part of the WFA when the other league stopped play. So I'm not really sure how many, if there were very many at all, of the athletes on the Passion that went over to the Force, not, you know, the Pittsburgh Force, the other, when I say Force, I always think Chicago. And that's a pet peeve of mine. Don't name the teams the same as something in the other league. So anyway.
I know. It's so confusing.
I get confused easily enough.
The first
but
show.
Anyway, so what I was saying about the Pittsburgh. Go ahead.
Well, no. When I the very first week I did the show, I'm like confusing which league people are in because there's so many carryovers on names. I mean, there's a Diamonds team and a WFA, and you know, there's several. Let me just go through. There's six teams in Pittsburgh. Or not in Pittsburgh, but there's the Philadelphia Liberty Bells. In Pennsylvania, there's 16. There's the Liberty Bells in Philly, and then there's the Firebirds. The Liberty Bells are in the WFA. The Firebirds are in the IWFL. In Pittsburgh, there's the Force and the Passion. And then there's the Central PA Vipers, and then there's the Keystone Assault. So that's
which is
just
the Harrisburg team, right? Yeah.
It gets confusing. PA Vipers, the Central PA Vipers and the Keystone Assault are both Harrisburg teams.
Oh, okay.
The Keystone Assault play. Well, I say Harrisburg because there are little suburbs there, and I just looked that up. And then when we go to Texas, it gets confusing because there's the Mustangs, the Lone Star Mustangs. They're right outside of Dallas. Of course, Dallas is right outside of Dallas. There's all those little, I don't know if you've ever been to that part of Texas.
I have actually been to their stadium in Richmond, North Richland or whatever it's called.
The Mustangs?
I went to go see the Wisconsin Wolves play at Dallas one year and had a great time.
Yeah.
You were talking about all those teams in Texas, and when I was looking at the standings today in the WFA, the Southwest Division was the one I circled in my highlighter because that's kind of an interesting group out there. They have the Austin Outlaws, Lone Star Mustangs, Houston, who was the champion team of the NWFA, right? And then East Texas Sabercats, I think, are being credited with forfeits for the rest of the year. But for the three teams that are playing, all the points for and points against numbers are very, very close. So the games that are being played between the Texas teams are not blowouts. They are all close games. And that makes it interesting. You know, you aren't having these, 48-0 games, which, you know, that's fun when it's your team, it's up 48, but, I mean, it's not something that's ever going to build a fan base.
Well, it's fun, but it's not that fun, Boo. I mean, we've watched those.
But anyway, so my point was, I like that there's a lot of good competitive football going on down in the WFA in Texas. I'm not sure how they would stack up against other teams in that league or in the other league, how competitive they'd be with other organizations, but amongst themselves, they're playing some good, tight football, and that's got to be entertaining for the fans, and I like seeing that.
Well, yeah, and then, you know, there's the East Texas Sabercats, they're gone out of the league, but some of their players rotated in to the IWFL's team, the Shreveport Aftershock. I talked to that coach at the beginning of the year, and they're really close to Shreveport. Well, I shouldn't say really close. I think they drive a couple hours because I think their coach is a Texas fella. But,
yeah, close by Texas standards.
Right, Midwest standards. You know, everybody knows each other, all 20 people there. But, yeah, there's quite a few really close teams in the WFA. Now, the Philadelphia team is the Liberty Bells. They're doing really well in that league. And then you remember the Jacksonville Dixie Blues, don't you?
Absolutely. Now, the Dixie Blues have been jumping around in leagues. And, you know, they played in the championship game of the WAFL, as you and I know. And after that, they sort of jumped around in other leagues that, and it was kind of a weird geographic thing because, you know, they're all the way down there in North Florida. And sort of, it never worked out that they'd end up in one of the big leagues, which for a while that was the WPFL, the NWFA, and the IWFL. And they were always in some little league that wasn't one of those three, now two major leagues going on. And it's so nice to see them coming back into one of the leagues where they're playing quality teams, because they really haven't been playing quality teams for a number of years. So it's really nice to see them back and, you know, playing against opponents who we sort of know something about now. So, you know, I like seeing them coming back to the rest of the world of football, you know.
Right. Well, they're right now they're 3-0, and they've been having a pretty good season. Now, let's take a look at a couple of those other Florida teams, because I want to know which ones have been around a while and which ones haven't.
Miami's been around for a while.
Okay, well, they're 4-1. Because we're going on your theory here. I put down some records here. I just heard a voiceover. Sorry, I got distracted. But the Fury are 4-1.
Mm-hmm.
I'm off the host queue. What does that mean?
I think you're still on the air there.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
I can hear you. I don't know if the everybody
I'm
else
hearing
can
voices, Boo, and that's normal for me sometimes, but not on the when we're talking on the internet. So anyway, so you know, another team, the Gulf Coast Riptide. Have they been around for a while with other names? Because I'm not familiar with the Gulf Coast Riptide.
They were one of the best teams in the NWFA for a long time, when they were known as the Pensacola Power. They went to the first few championship games, I think the first three, or I'd have to look it up. But, yeah, the Pensacola Power was, and they were known as a running team. They really had a powerful running back. And the team that beat them in the first NWFA championship was the Philadelphia Liberty Bells. So, yeah, there's some old names on this list, aren't there?
Yes, there are. The Liberty
now,
Bells.
The current Liberty Bells don't have, I don't think they have anything to do with that version of the Liberty Bells. They're just reusing the name, and I don't think they have any of the personnel. But, you know, it's a team with a bit of a storied history, as much as we get storied histories in women's football, in that the Liberty Bells had a running back. Her name was Alyssa Wicks, I think it was. And she was like the monster. She was the one that nobody could stop. She was like the Jessica Springer of 2000 and 2001. So, that's the history that goes behind the name of Liberty Bells, is they've always had a very powerful running game and a winning tradition.
Well, they have a pretty powerful running game right now. I did not get any of their statistics. I could go back in my files and pull some up, but they had three of the top 20 rushers the first 3 weeks of play.
Nice.
In fact, one of their main rushers, Mary Rose Roach, was on the show a few weeks ago, and she had something close to, if not 300, I think it was 300 yards in a game. I don't know. BJ, you might remember that better than I would, but she's just an amazing running back, and they've got two or three others that were up there in the statistics, so they're carrying
that
on.
That is really nice. Nice to see. And, you know, Deb, I got to thank you. I got to say how much I appreciate, you know, somebody like you coming on with the show and giving the recognition to those players, because a lot of these women, they do great athletic feats on the field and they toil in absolute obscurity because nobody ever hears about us and nobody ever, you know, sees what they do, even though it's so much fun to watch and so incredible to think about what they're doing. You know, we work our day jobs and we go and we practice during the week and we go play on the weekends and to play this game that we love. And, you know, thank you for giving recognition to the people who are doing it well. I think that's really cool of you.
Well, it's my pleasure. I mean, you know, I love to look up all the statistics and stuff. If we could only get every team to be consistent about turning them in, we could have some pretty dynamic stories to tell, I'm sure. But the ones that are there now, we're trying to get them out there. But BJ gave me the statistics. She had 8 carries, 292 yards, and 3 touchdowns. You'd be making millions of dollars if you did that in the NFL.
That's the truth. Absolutely.
I mean, goodness. Same thing with, like, Grisafi, Jenny Schmidt. There's so many quarterbacks that are just really racking up the yards. Now, Jenny Schmidt and Grisafi, they're both in the IWFL. I don't have specific information about the WFA, their quarterbacks recently, but I think they have a couple that are doing a really good job. I think one of them, I can't remember right now, Boo, but boy, I tell you, there's some really good quarterbacks. It takes us back to the Mary Margaret days, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was so much fun watching Mary Margaret play. You know, and you know, I was on the line. You were on defense, but I was on O. And it was so much fun. I never saw Mary Margaret play when I was on the field, but I heard her laughing behind me. And that was just a joy. It, you know, I think you played one season on the O-line, and you just heard her giggling behind you.
Yeah.
Because that was Mary Margaret then. So it's really nice to see, you know, a lot of quarterbacks, as you say, there's some younger quarterbacks in the league that aren't afraid to air it out, that aren't afraid to put it up, and, you know, and they have the receivers to go along with the running game now. And it's really just brought a whole new dimension to women's football in the last year or two to see some of these teams that are playing the passing game and playing it well.
Right. It's the mayhem from the WFA that's really hitting it hard with the passing game. They're the top one.
Mayhem? That's West Michigan Mayhem?
Yeah, West. I think it's the West Michigan Mayhem. Let me double check that. I'm pretty sure.
Right on. Okay, here's my stat sheet. They're 5-0, and I think they've been playing some pretty good teams as well. They were in the – were they the champions? No, it was Houston last year that was the champions of the NWFA. But they've been a contender. They've been in the playoffs. They've gotten deep into the playoffs for like the last, you know, 3 years, maybe more. And they have some pretty good players out there that have stayed with the team. And, you know, that's kind of the football area of the country, too, you know, up in the, you know, West Michigan, and then there's also, like, up around South Bend, and, you know, Chicago's in that sort of general Great Lakes area, I suppose. And
yeah, that's
where
that's one of my coin areas.
Mm-hmm.
Up there in that Great Lakes area is one of the areas where there's a cluster, a lot of teams up there.
Yeah, and you know, it's like a lot of kids like me, a lot of girls grew up wishing they could play football, and now they finally got their chance, and, you know, just do it with vengeance. Play as hard as you can for, you know, as long as your knees hold out, and just go for it, you know, have some fun.
Well, you know, ironically, there have been 3 different people, and Catherine Vivo, I'm sure you're fairly familiar with her because you do so many things for the California Quake. She played in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Mary Rose Roach. She played on her high school team. And then I think it's Sammy Grisafi played in Redlands for a Division I school. I don't know that Sammy played varsity, but there's 3 examples of girls who were able, because of Title IX,
mm-hmm.
were able to play on the boys' teams, play football, and now they're playing in the professional leagues.
Yeah.
So,
well, God bless,
you know,
Title IX. You've heard me go on my rant about Title IX, right, about why it's the most wonderful thing ever, right?
Well, I think
I can tell it to you again for your radio audience.
Well, why don't you go off? Just take your time, Boo, and explain it as much as or pontificate as much as you would like.
Deb, you know I am incapable of telling a short story, but I think Title IX is like the coolest thing ever because, you know, back when I was growing up, it was still kind of weird to be a sporty girl. You know, that tomboys got other names called too, and they weren't always the most flattering in the world. And it was just sort of not a done thing, not a cool thing to be a chick who was into athletics. And that sort of tells you that I'm a little bit older than a lot of the people who are hanging around football these days. But and then Title IX comes along. And now all of a sudden you're able to play sports and have it not be a weird thing during those formative years of junior high and high school. So now, like when I was growing up, the only sports that women really played and got paid attention to was individual sports like tennis or golf. There weren't any team sports that were, you know, got any sort of coverage or attention, or, you know, no media at all. But, you know, it was Christy versus Martina all the time in Wimbledon. So now, you know, and so I played tennis when I was a little girl. That was my sport. Now we have girls who are growing up and they're watching, you know, Mia Hamm and Brandi Chastain running around on a field in a team sport where the girls are working together and doing team sport things. And we have softball and we have basketball and we have a lot of, you know, team sports being shown on TV. You know, we don't get ESPN, we get ESPN2. But still, you know, it's a lot more attention than when I was growing up. And so being on a team is not a weird thing anymore. And being a chick who's into athletics is not a weird thing anymore. It's kind of culturally okay. And, you know, it's kind of not a big deal, but it's kind of a huge deal because now there's this whole other world that has opened up to us. And football is still sort of the last frontier, you know, the man's sport and girls don't play. But, yeah, we're playing, and some of us are playing it pretty darn well. And most people don't think, you know, it's like, if you want to play football, well, you're kind of crazy in the head to want to, like, hurt yourself like that. But nobody, the majority of people, I'd say like 80% or more of people think, you know, that's your choice, not that's a culturally wrong thing to do, except, you know, maybe some, you know, Neanderthals that are still living in some backward parts of the world that, you know, think that girls shouldn't play because they're girls. We're past that now, and that's because of Title IX. And little girls growing up and seeing team sports. That's my rant.
Well, I agree completely. I mean, we've got, there are women in professional racing on all the different circuits. There mm-hmm. are women who are competing in professional basketball leagues. I know that most of the softball leagues are defunct now, but for a period of time, there were quite a few, especially back east, quite a few professional softball teams. Mm-hmm. There are still some, it's not as strong as it was, but some professional soccer teams. So, yeah, you can't really imagine the difference that it's made. Title IX is just huge. So, and I think a lot of that is because of Billie Jean King, isn't it? Wasn't she one of the instrumental people, like especially laying the groundwork for that?
Well, Billie Jean King was instrumental in so many things, but one of the things that she is most importantly remembered for was fighting for equal pay. You know, that why are the women getting paid half of what the men are getting paid for playing the same game? Which, you know, right on Billie Jean. So
right.
She's and you know, being that strong, vivacious, incredibly intelligent personality is, you know, she just did wonderful, wonderful things to open the way for the rest of us.
All right then. Well, I need to get into predicting some of the games that are going to be played the next week here, Bood. Would you like to stay on and give me your 2 cents about it? I'll run through them. Or do you have plans? I told you I needed you for a half an hour, but you're welcome.
You let me run over, pal. Look what you did.
Well, that's okay. We didn't get you on right away. It's close to 30 minutes. But feel free if you want to make any comments.
Yeah, I'll stay on the line, but I'll let you do your spiel.
Okay, well, the first one that we're going to go through the IWFL first. We've got the Amazons playing the Monsoon. That's going to be pretty much a blowout. I imagine a donut will be racked up there for the Amazons. We've got the Montreal Blitz playing the Nemesis. Now, statistically speaking, I chose the Nemesis. What would you say?
I think I got to go with you there. The Nemesis has some veteran players, and the Blitz are not playing as well as they did last year. But do you have a score prediction? I say 3-1.
I don't ever make score predictions. I feel happy if I remember which league the players and the teams are in right now.
Excellent. Well, you go.
Then we go to the Pittsburgh Passion playing the Connecticut Crushers. I think the Passion are going to crush the Crushers. That's my opinion. But
Pittsburgh's a good team.
Yeah, they're pretty strong. The Divas play the Philadelphia Firebirds. It's two Tier 1 teams going at it, but I believe the Divas will pretty easily outpower them. Now, the next game, I'm going to need your input here, Boo. We've got the Chicago Force and the Kansas City Tribe.
Game of the week. I think Chicago will win, but Kansas City will make it closer than a lot of people are expecting.
I'm going to go with Kansas City with a 2-point spread.
I think that that would be considered an upset, but, you know, Kansas City is going to have to play a pretty good game in order to beat Chicago, because Chicago is still a strong team. But, you know, go try
it's all,
go to it.
It's all going to depend on Grisafi coming back, because I don't think Chicago has been racking up the numbers that they had before, and it was a really close game the first time they played. So I'm looking for this to be the game of probably the season, because this is going to make a big difference. But the first time
indeed it will.
Kansas City played, they lost 6-28. So we'll see. You're probably right, Lou, but I got to root for Kansas City.
No,
I like the underdog.
Go with your gut. Always go with your gut.
Yeah. Then we got the Louisiana Fuel, the Shreveport Aftershock.
Shreveport will take that one.
Yeah, Shreveport's got that one down in the bag, I think. Miami Fury is facing the Diamonds, and pretty much I hope they've been practicing hard to get ready. Diamonds, let's see, next is the Manchester Freedom, the Erie Illusion. I'm going to go with the Freedom on that. Statistically speaking, they should probably win. Any thoughts?
I don't know too much about either of those teams. I think the Freedom are a team that are rebuilding right now, but I'm not sure how much Erie has. So it's it could be a very entertaining game, but it's not a top-level game.
Okay,
so,
let me go
yeah.
back to the,
what's
to
going?
The Tribe. BJ's giving me some info here. Jenny passed for 177 yards last game against Chicago. So, you know who Jenny Schmidt is? Do you remember who she is?
I don't know that name.
Okay, Jenny Schmidt, she played, well, she started out at, let's see, Illinois State, I think. She played some basketball there, and she played overseas, and then she played in the, not the WNBA, but she played in the National Women's Basketball League, was it?
The ABL?
I believe. Yeah. No, it wasn't the ABL. It was the other one.
The other one.
But anyway, so she's a pretty strong athlete. She's pretty amazing. And so we got a little information on the stats for that.
And she's playing for Kansas City, you're saying?
Yeah, and BJ said that they're both going to be playing six-man football this weekend because of all the injuries that they've encountered.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
That could change things, you know, because that's kind of a wide-open game, and, you know, they're the athletes will make a difference more than the coaches, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, and also if they've had experience playing in six-man football, I would think that that's a pretty huge transition. How many do you play with the flag?
Well, we played eight-man flag all the time. But for six-man football, I think you only have you have three on the line. You have a center and two guards, and that's it, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh,
yeah,
you know
then
what?
you have two receivers and a – no, it's got to be everybody's eligible. I don't know what the Sixers rules are.
Yeah, you know what? It's not Chicago and KC. They're going 11-11. It's Shreveport and the Fuel.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I'd hate to see, you know, Chicago, a team that's likely headed for the playoffs, I'd hate to see them have to play a six-man game, because that means they aren't going to make it into the playoffs, you know. You know, and there was something on, I know we're messing up your predictions now, but there was something on the IWFL website that I saw this week where they were talking about how Corvallis and Reading are teaming together to play this year. Did you read that article on the IWFL site?
I did not.
Yeah, well, apparently both of the teams were, you know, heading into the season. They both wanted to play, but they both didn't have large enough rosters. So they decided to team up, and they're sort of doing, you know, like the wartime Steagles. You remember in the Steelers and the Eagles? Do you remember the stories about how they played together?
No.
They're doing the Steagles, you know?
Ah.
So
well,
it's Corvallis and Reading.
If it can happen for the Steelers and the Eagles, I guess it's not a big deal if the Reading team and the Corvallis team do it.
Yeah, but it means like half the squad has a four-hour commute, you know? It's hell of a road game, I'll tell you.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, so on with your predictions, my friend.
Evidently, the Shreveport Fuel and the Fuel teamed up against the Energy and the Diamond the last two games, too. So that's happening more than we may know.
No? Okay.
All right, so did we talk about the Chattanooga Locomotion? trying to see.
Now, there's another team that's been around for a good long time. The same with the Sharks. You know, those are teams that have good story and good history, but just kind of aren't playing up to it this year. You know, the Quake are a little bit in that category, too. You know, they have their ups and downs. But Chattanooga was one of the original 10 of the NWSL as well. And they used to have the Battle Royal all the time with the Alabama Renegades, which has sort of become, I believe, the Tennessee Valley Tigers now.
The Tigers are having a really good season.
Mm-hmm. And Chattanooga isn't. Yeah. And I think Chattanooga is a team that, you know, they're in a rebuilding period. They're going to be back. They've been very strong in the past, and I believe they can get there again. So who's Chattanooga playing this week?
They are playing against the Clarksville Fox, who I think will succumb to the locomotion. I think they're going to take a little ride on the train. Train are going to take that. So.
There you go, choo-choo.
Yeah, there you go. The New Mexico Menace will play the SoCal Breakers. The Militia play the Baltimore Nighthawks. And that one, I believe.
Militia all over that one, too.
Right, yes. The Palm Beach Punishers are going to be playing the Orlando Mayhem.
The Mayhem is a team that they were better last year than they're playing right now, and I think they have the potential to really take it to Palm Beach. But we'll see. I'm hoping that's not going to be a 60-0 game.
Yeah. Well, Palm Beach is probably going to win that, according to statistics. But
really? You think so?
Yeah.
Huh.
Well,
okay.
It was pretty – I think that was one of the ones that was fairly close. But I'd have to look back. Let me give you a quick update on the Baltimore Nighthawks.
Mm-hmm.
Are down to 14 healthy players. Now,
yeah, it's really sad when you have a roster that small. I mean, you can't play football with that few people, and it's you're really asking for injuries when you do. So,
yeah, well, we went to Dallas one year. The last year I played, my shouldn't have played season. I don't know how many people have had those, but the shouldn't have played season that happened. Anyway, we went to Dallas, and we only had, like, 16 people. I think by the end of the game, whenever we switched offense to defense, there was no switching.
One or two people would come off, right? Yeah.
Two quarterbacks in one period, in one quarter there. So I can relate to that. It's a terrible thing to have to deal with, but if you love football, you do what you got to. So the Quake play the Modesto Maniacs. Did we talk about that one yet?
Well, the Maniacs were in Long Beach. We're in Downey last weekend, and they did a little better than I was expecting against the Quake. The Quake ended up winning that game 58-24, I think it was, which, you know, they ran away with it in the fourth quarter. But Modesto really, they saw some vulnerabilities, and they were taking advantage of them. And I think they can make it a bit of a game, but I think the Quake will take, you know, we'll walk away with the win again. But again, it's in Modesto's house.
Well, you just kind of hope for a good game in a situation like that. I was able to go back and look, and, you know, the Punishers and the Mayhem are really, really close. When you look at their ratings, the Palm Beach Punishers are 0.37, and the Mayhem are 0.29. So that can
But I'm not sure if Palm Beach has played this year, whether or not they're playing, you know, quality teams or not quite as up there teams. You know what I'm saying?
And you're saying Orlando has been playing some tough teams?
I kind of haven't been paying attention, and I'm really sorry. I've been paying much more attention to the football on the West Coast this year, and, you know, my job's been so crazy, and I just haven't really been, you know, poring over the stats as much as I do some years. So I'm going to have to rely on your judgment here, Deb.
When the Punishers played the Mayhem the first game of the season, it was 21-6.
Really? Okay. Punishers are getting better then.
Yeah. So that's all I'm going by. But anyway, so let's move on. I'll tell you, Carolina, the Queens and the Phoenix are playing finally. I have been waiting for this game like 3 weeks.
They're both undefeated now, aren't they?
Oh, yes. I'm going to go with the Queens, but, I mean, this is like a crosstown rivalry. It has to be. I don't know how it couldn't be. The Queens are more of a rushing team. Phoenix is a little bit more of a passing team. But I'm going to tell you, the difference in these teams is that the Phoenix have had yards and yards and yards of penalties, at least as far as the statistics go, that are available.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they'll be able to suck that up and pull it together. So definitely the Queens, but those two teams are neck and neck.
Is that your game of the week here?
You know, I think it's probably if you were there and you watched the Chicago Force on one side of the field, or maybe on one side of the stands, and on the other side was the Queens and the Phoenix. I think you probably faced the Phoenix and the Queens.
Cool.
I think it would be. I think that's how close it's going to be. Now, it might be a little bit more exciting on the other side, but I'm just going to go with that. The Queens and the Phoenix they're like 2 and 3 in the Tier 2 teams. So I'm telling you, this is a huge, huge game. I'm so excited to find out what happened.
Nice. Okay, let's teleport ourselves there. Let's go watch that game.
That's even further than the other one. If we only had Scotty. The Southern Maine Rebels are playing New Jersey Justice. I think the Justice will take that one. The Sharks, you talked about the Sharks. They're playing the New England Intensity. We talked about them. What would you think on that one?
The Sharks are, again, in a bit of a rebuilding session. They're not playing up to where they were a couple of years ago. And I think New England is really, they've surprised me with I think they're undefeated right now, 5-0. Again, I'm not sure the quality of teams they've played. But right now I got to give New England the nod. They're playing some good football.
Okay. Well, let's look. They are playing a lot of Tier 2 teams.
Yeah, and, you know, so here we have Tier 1 versus Tier 2. But, I mean,
yeah.
The Sharks haven't really showed me a lot this year. They have two losses, but, you know, they're not putting a lot of points on the board right now.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with the Sharks, and
okay.
I'm going to click down here, boo.
What was the other one we disagreed on?
Oh, well, we didn't really disagree. I just have to go for my tribe, and you're going for the Force.
Okay.
So I think you're definitely in the driving seat there, but I have to stick with
it. I may be giving it back to you on this one, though. But I'll take New England on this one.
All right. Now, we talked about the Corvallis Pride, and they're playing with Reading, and they're facing the Sacramento Sirens.
Sacramento, but I want to see, you know, Corvallis / Reading get on there and, you know, give them a game and put some points on the board. I don't want that one to be a shutout. Sacramento's got a pretty good defense, though.
I think last week Corvallis had a pretty good game. I can't remember who they played. BJ's probably typing it in right now as we speak. They played Reading last week.
It was a forfeit thing, huh?
Okay. BJ wants me to put in a little blip here about Karen Mulligan from the Sharks. She is one of the statistic leaders as far as passing. Now, let me look real quick here while we're in this. Where is she? Karen Mulligan. Okay, she's racked up 773 yards, and she averages 8 yards per pass. So she's having a pretty good season when it comes to throwing. I think she's number 2 in the league. No, Marty Albert. I didn't write down where she's playing at. So
okay. Well, I'm looking on the web right now, and the Sharks. Their two losses were to Boston Militia, who we know is a good team, and DC Divas, who we know is a good team, and they lost both of those games by a score of 7-21, according to the IWFL website. So, it's too late for me to change my pick because I say so, but you know. Sharks are not as slouchy as I was thinking. They're doing better this year than they did last year, I think.
Yeah, so. Well, BJ says that Karen Mulligan is iffy.
Hmm.
So you might have me on this one. We'll just have to wait and see. You're going to be wanting to call in again next week, Boo. If you take both of those, I know you're going to call in. BJ will put you on, though. Okay, so Tennessee Valley Tigers play the Louisville Nightmare, and I think that's going to go to the Tigers. I think you mentioned them. So the Tigers are,
sort of a retool of the Alabama team.
Alabama,
the Renegades.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm going to put notes on there so I can try and remember that. I'll forget that. And then the last game in the IWFL, the Warriors and the Vixen. Now, the Warriors are a Tier 2 team.
Mm-hmm.
The Vixen
but they're
are
playing
tier
some good
team.
Ball.
I think the Warriors are going to take it.
Yeah, I think the Warriors should be a Tier 1 team.
Well, they were, but their numbers
mm-hmm.
dropped. And I guess one of the factors is how many people they have on their roster. But, you
mm-hmm.
know, I'm thinking that some of the players from the Warriors were probably played for the ICE. I don't know that. I've been trying to find that out. BJ said she'd do a little checking on that. BJ, do you know anything? I kind of dropped the ball. I didn't do any more research on that.
We'll find that out for next week.
Yeah, I kind of dropped the ball on that. But I think some of the ICE players are on that team.
I got to agree with you on that pick. I think the Warriors can take it. The Vixens, again, one of the most storied teams in women's football, is they're frankly not having a good year. I expect them to do better next year. And, it was my honor last year to finally meet Moose in person. And she's been playing with the Vixens since the barnstorming season 2009, so, or 1999.
Did she start when she was six, or what happened on that?
Crazy, isn't it? You know, I think how many years I have been retired. And, you know, look at Betty Suzuki still playing. She played before there was football in America. She was playing in Japan, and she just keeps on going. So,
yeah. Well, we've got 3 minutes to go here, Boo, so I probably better run through real quickly.
Okay, I'll shut up.
Well, no. I'm going to sign you off or get with you in a second here. But we got the Liberty Bells. I think they're going to take their game. The Keystone Assault. I'm going to go with the New
against
Jersey
two,
Titans.
Against
the
two.
Kentucky, yeah, Kentucky Karma, the Pittsburgh Force, the Indiana Speed, the Dayton Diamonds. That's a really close game against the Toledo Rain. That's the game of the week there. I'm going to go with the Memphis Belles, the Jacksonville Dixie Blues, who have been around for a long time. And, by the way, Rocky Brown is still playing.
Is she really?
St. Louis Slam, Iowa Thunder, the Houston Cyclones. I'm going to go with the Outlaws. But, you know, it's time. The Lone Star Mustangs may take this one. I remember back when we were playing against, Caliente, and we could only beat them a couple times, or they could only beat us a couple times back and forth. California Lynx and the Showgirls, those are the teams I'm going to predict. We'll see how that goes. But I think we've got a couple minutes left, Boo. I want to tell you thank you so much for being on the show. It's been wonderful getting your expertise, because I know probably maybe you and BJ are the historians. We should put you up like, you know, a little poster, the historians of women's football.
I've got all this useless knowledge bouncing around in my head. I love sharing it with the audience.
Well,
thank you for inviting me on the show.
Absolutely, and I'll twist your arm again one of these days. We may maybe get you back on when we're talking a little bit more about the playoffs. We'll see how things go.
Okay, that means I got to start paying more attention, huh?
Oh, you don't. I can tell you did a little research today. And what does it take you, a day to catch up? So I don't know what that says. It's something about both of us, maybe. Well, we'll let that go. Anyway, those of you who tune in, thank you for listening. Those of you who are going to listen later on in the week, thanks for checking us out. And go to a game and take a couple friends. And really, we can't say this enough, support women's football. If you're a part of an organization, turn in your stats so we have something to talk about. But let's make all of these people who put in the blood, sweat, and tears, let's make them happy by going to see a game this week. That's my closing thought. Anything from you, Boo?
No, well said.
All right.
I support women's football all the time, and I think you should too.
That's right. So thanks again, and BJ, thanks again for the opportunity, and tune in to all the shows that are available, Women's Football Talk, and also Women's Football Talk continues. It's Deb Jens, and thanks a lot.